Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of the Mysterious Benedict Society Read Aloud Podcast, Book 4. Today we will be reading Chapter 6, but first a recap of Chapter 5. Where we left off on Chapter 4 was Mr. Benedict trying to send a coded message to the children, but the listener interrupted the message. Then, the beginning of Chapter 5, Constance did not know how much the listener had heard and was very angry with her for interrupting. Constance told them she received part of the last message from Mr. Benedict before the listener came in. Something about doors made out of clay, the kind the French use? The society tried to figure out the meaning, but were having a very hard time. Ty was discovered to pick up on thoughts pretty easily, so everyone had to be on their guard. Constance couldn't be around while the others were figuring out the message, for fear of the listener listening. Kate decided it would be best for her to entertain Ty in order to distract him from Rennie and Sticky's thoughts. And then Rennie and Sticky hadn't been hanging out together or trying to solve a puzzle together for a very long time, so they both became very paranoid and uncomfortable, and they didn't know what to say to each other. Eventually, Sticky decided to leave, and so Rennie was left on his own to try and figure this riddle out. So that is the end of the summary, but before we get started, I've been asked a question by Alex, and that question was what I thought about the Mysterious Benedict Society TV series on Disney+. To answer your question, Alex, I really enjoyed the series. I thought they strayed from the book a bit, but not enough that I didn't like it. In my opinion, the book is always better, guys, and that's for everything, but that's just what I think. I also discovered that Constance is my favorite character in the TV series, but that Kate has always been my favorite in the book series, so there's a fun fact for you. Thank you for the question, Alex. If anyone else has any questions, I would be more than happy to answer them. Okay, I hope you are having a wonderful morning, afternoon, or evening, depending on when you listen to this, and enjoy the episode. Chapter 6. Melancholy Musings and Rueful Ruminations. Down on the first floor in Kate's room, Ty Lai was jumping on the bed, something he had never been allowed to do in the orphanage. It was an especially springy bed with an especially sturdy frame, and with every jump, Ty thought he might be able to reach the ceiling with his outstretched fingers. "You're not even close," Kate said from where she sat at her desk. "You realize that, right?" "How close?" said Ty, bouncing breathlessly. "Am I getting?" Kate watched him a moment. 9 inches, she said, returning to her work. Arrayed on the desk before her were 2 dozen darts, ampoules of tranquilizer serum, and what resembled a very large water pistol. One by one, Kate was inspecting the ampoules, snapping them into their corresponding darts and slipping the darts inside her jacket. "Aren't you," Ty panted, "going to put the darts into the gun?" "With you in the room, no." "How many can you put in there?" 6 at a time, Kate said, then added under her breath, "I wish it were 13. "Me too," Ty said, "one for each of the bad men." Kate looked up, her mouth drawn tight. She had never liked it when Constance read her thoughts, and she did not like it any better when this little boy did. Even though she had to admit, Ty Lai was infinitely more agreeable as a little boy than Constance had been as a little girl. Anyway, he certainly wasn't doing it on purpose, and so she said nothing. "What's the matter?" Ty asked, having neither seen or sensed Kate's annoyance. "Do you want me to stop jumping on the bed?" "What? No, you have at it," Kate said, returning to her work. "You're really good at it." "But what if I break the bed?" Ty panted, having been cautioned about such a disaster in the past. Kate shrugged. "I'll fix it." "But what if I fall off?" "I'll catch you," Kate said. "But you're way over there, and you're sitting down." Kate shrugged again. "I'd still catch you, bouncy boy." The rumble of a motorcycle sounded outside. Kate listened long enough to be sure it was Captain Plug returning. Kate was thoroughly familiar with the guard's throttle patterns as she navigated the squeaky courtyard gate and then around to the back of the house. Satisfied, Kate held up one of the ampoules. "Did Constance tell you about these?" Ty climbed down from the bed and went over to the desk. "They knock you out." Kate snapped her fingers. "Just like that," she said. And as Ty tried in vain to snap his own fingers, she went on. "Rhonda Kinsale invented this particular formula. You know about Rhonda, right?" "She's Constance's sister." "That's right. She and number 2 were Mr. Brunick's assistants, and he ended up adopting both of them, just like Constance. Well, among other things, Rhonda is an expert chemist, and she came up with this stuff so that Milligan could avoid hurting bad guys, or worse than he had to. It was Sticky who whipped up this particular batch. Evidently, there's nothing he can't do these days." Ty asked if he could hold one of the ampoules, and Kate gave him one. He held it up to the light, admiring the amber-colored liquid inside. "Is it like duckswort?" Kate raised her eyebrow. "What do you know about duckswort?" Constance told me that you went on a big adventure to find some, but there wasn't any left. Only a plant called Throttwort? Ty pronounced the word with some difficulty. Which doesn't do anything except glow in the dark. But then she said that for one of your projects, you and Milligan went on an expedition, and you hung from the ropes on the side of the cliff for 2 whole days, and you found some duck's work, and you brought it home, but then it turned to dust, and it was the last in the world. Let's have that back, mister, Kate said, for Ty was gesturing excitedly with the ampoule. He handed it over. That's all true, it was Rennie's idea. He and Sticky, George, dug through scads of books and based on what we already knew about duck's work, and what George already knew about the climate, geography, botany, and I don't know what else, they narrowed the possibilities down to a few locations around the North Sea. Then they showed me what they figured out. I took it straight to Milligan, and a month later I was 100 feet above the ground, surrounded by screaming cliff shallows, scouring jagged rocks for duck's work and freezing rain. It was amazing! And now it's all gone? Yep, it's fragile stuff, Kate said. I mean, it was. And George is now the only person in the world who ever saw it under a microscope. Not even Mr. Benedict got a chance. He wanted George to be the first to get a crack at it. Wow, Ty breathed. What did Constance do in the project? Constance declared herself official project chronicler. She wrote a poem about it. That's how I know about it. She told me the poem. Kate snorted. I'm sure she did. Well, I have to admit, it wasn't a bad poem. There was some tricky rhymes, it was a little insulting, and I don't see why she had to make the entire last stanza about the importance of the poet in such endeavors. But we're all used to that sort of thing. It's funny if you take it the right angle on it. I loved it, Ty said, laughing. Then he grew serious. Aren't you going to miss doing projects together? Kate narrowed her eyes. So you've heard things are changing around here, have you? She sighed. Of course I'll miss our projects. That platform you like riding on so much? Well, the roof was leaking, and there was rotten boards in the attic, and it was all going to have to be repaired anyway. So Mr. Benedict suggested we could use little hands-on experience in hydraulics and construction. The boys and I built the platform ourselves. And did Constance write a poem about it? Ty asked hopefully. She did. Ty giggled. Tell me the other projects. Honestly, there are too many to tell you all of them right now. But we put in the intercom system ourselves and some special trick windows, and we used Mr. Curtin's technology to build a little machine that I nicknamed the Husher. A noise cancellation device that makes everything around it perfectly silent. You can imagine what pranks we played on one another with that. Constance said it was just you who played the pranks, until everybody begged you to stop scaring them. Kate frowned and considered this. Huh, that might actually be true. She had finished her dark preparations now and was double-checking that everything was in its proper place. She had a feeling that she was going to need to use the tranquilizer gun in the near future, and it was a nervous thought, even for her. And yet, Kate realized, the nervous feeling was actually a relief, because it took her mind off the other feeling, the one that prompted by Ty's question. Aren't you going to miss doing projects together? The melancholy feeling. Kate much preferred the nervous one. Ty was edging around the desk to get closer to the empty tranquilizer gun. Kate slid it out of reach. Ty began edging around the desk in the other direction. Are you as good as Milligan with that? He asked. These days I'm even better, Kate said matter-of-factly. Then, upon a moment's reflection, she added, I don't know if he realizes that, though. I used to be amazed at how fast and accurate Milligan was with his. But you aren't anymore? Well, like I said, I'm faster and more accurate than he is now. And it doesn't seem quite the thing, you know, to be amazed at one's own abilities. Ty's face took on a crafty expression. I'll bet you really aren't as good as Milligan is. Kate gave him a look. I know what you're trying to do. Show me, Kate, please. Kate took a deep breath. Not because she didn't want to give Ty a demonstration, she already felt as though she would do anything for this little boy, but because she knew her instinct was to make choices that others found rather less than careful. She wanted to be sure of her choice now. Okay, get down here behind the desk, Kate said. Ty eagerly complied. Now peek over the top of it and look at that spot above the door. Do you see it? Where there's a hole in the plaster above the sides, about a nickel? Good. Now get back down behind the desk again. We're going to be on the extra safe side, you and me. Okay, Ty exclaimed. He covered his ears. You don't need to do that. It's pretty quiet. Now look, Kate said, showing him a dart. She removed its ampoule out of the serum. See that? Now I won't waste serum on the poor old wall that never hurt anybody. Right, Ty said, grinning. He still had his hands over his ears, but Kate wasn't going to insist. So now I just load the dart like this, Kate said, showing him. And then she moved so quickly that Ty uttered a startled squeak and fell backward. When he recovered his balance a moment later, the tranquilizer gun was resting on the desk, and Kate was regarding Ty with crossed arms. And that's how I do it. Did you shoot the dart? Asked Ty. What do you mean, did I shoot the dart? You saw me. Ty slowly stood up and gaped at the tiny hole in the plaster above the door. It seemed to have bloomed feathers, he gasped. Kate smiled. Her own eyes went up to the ceiling above which, she presumed, Rennie and Sticky were busy solving the message for Mr. Benedict. You should be up there, she thought, and then, or no, actually, you need to get used to this. It's good. It's all fine. What's the matter? Kate lowered her gaze and discovered Ty looking up at her with an expression of concern. She put on a frown. Are you kidding me? Nothing's the matter. Didn't you see that shot? Ty cocked his head uncertainly. But now you're thinking about SQ's big feet, like Rennie did when he was trying to keep me from hearing his thoughts. Good grief, Kate said, shaking her head. Can't a person think about somebody's big feet sometimes? She made as if to tickle Ty, who giggled and leaped away. She took a deep breath and said, I do believe that bed needs more jumping on. Can you help it out? Yes, I can, Ty cried happily. And for the moment, at least, Kate was out of danger of crying. In her room on the third floor, Constance lay in bed, her shoes still long glaring at the ceiling. She could feel the listener's presence, a palpable attentiveness, but she deflected the intrusions easily enough. The listener was a person, too, after all, and Constance knew she was equally exhausted, not to mention conflicted. Constance could sense the uncertainty in that invisible gaze. The listener was understandably confused, and Constance knew she shouldn't be angry at this woman who had been brainswept, who was being deceived or compelled to buzz Constance's brain like this. But Constance Contraire was very angry indeed. She was angry at this mental attack, angry at Sticky and Rennie for their attempt to abandon her on the ship, angry at the way they and Kate confided in one another in ways they didn't do with her, angry at being left out just now, angry at being left behind in the future. Constance squeezed her eyes closed. She felt tears trickle from the corners. The tears made her angry, too. She knew the Order 3 were keeping secrets from her. They still treated her like a little kid, although now that she thought about it, the way they treated Ty, who actually was a little kid, seemed far nicer than they were with her. Worse, she couldn't pretend that this wasn't partly her own fault. She was maddening to deal with. She'd been maddening to deal with even when she was cute little Ty Lai's age, and this made her angry too. Why does Ty have to be cute as a button when I was a whiner, a snoot, and a glutton? Now Constance was angry for coming up with that poem. She hadn't even meant to. Her mind skipped back to its previous track. Yes, she knew the Order 3 kept secrets from her, and the secrets were infuriating. But Constance would never try to sneak a look at them, because she learned the hard way years ago that it was much better not to do so. For she had perceived one day, only by eavesdropping on Rennie's thoughts, that she was getting on his nerves. He was thoroughly annoyed with her and trying hard to hide it. To Constance, this was a crushing revelation. For although she very often tried to get on others' nerves, she could hardly explain why. To discover that she could be annoying even when she wasn't trying, not a thing short of horrible. It had taken her a long time to recover from that feeling. Without realizing it, Rennie had helped her get better by being his usual kind and patient self. And Constance did know that he loved her, and that everyone else loved her too. And after a while, she came to realize that she'd simply learned an important lesson. She needed to judge her friends and family by their actions, not by their thoughts, for thoughts are fleeting and temperamental, the reflection of a moment, and are very often confused and misleading. Thoughts formed into spoken words are a different matter, and actual deeds another matter still. From then on, Constance had been extremely motivated to learn and avoid accidentally reading others' minds. She didn't want to feel that particular hurt again, and now trying to calm down, she reminded herself that it was okay to have secrets sometimes. After all, isn't every unspoken thought a secret? And didn't she have some secrets herself? But that proved an unhelpful line of thinking, for what Constance considered to be her greatest secret was the fact that, despite her best efforts, she hadn't been able to keep from knowing something, which was this. At one time or another in the last few years, every one of the older members of society had developed a temporary crush on one of the others. The extra intensity of the feeling had unavoidably drawn Constance's mental attention. She had been very annoyed, but it was also true that in every case, the society members had kept their crushes a secret, fearing that to reveal them would somehow risk damaging the society as a whole. Thus, for a while anyway, they had all made private sacrifices out of the loyalty to the group. That kind of dedication seemed to be fading now, which made Constance angry. And what made her angry still was the fact that she never revealed those secret crushes. Not even during the worst arguments, when Constance had desperately wanted to lash out and hurt her friends. How embarrassing it would have been for them. But time and again she had resisted using this powerful weapon, and she had viewed this as the greatest sacrifice of all, greater than any had other made. And the fact that she had made a great sacrifice for their sakes and none of them knew it made Constance angry. It made her furious. Constance opened her eyes. She wiped away the tears. She glared at the ceiling. She might not attack her friends, not really, but she definitely wanted to attack something. And there was the listener, still present, still confused, trying to get inside Constance's head to figure out where she was, what her plans were, what she knew. It's time to turn the tables, Constance thought, narrowing her eyes. Sticky was on the rooftop patio, sprinkling black powder over a bubbling red puddle, which caused the liquid to swell and firm up. The resulting mass looked like lasagna. Sticky used a gigantic spatula to scrape it up and drop it onto a metal container. He selected a different powder from his kit and went in search of a different puddle. This was something he could do almost without thinking. His knowledge of chemicals and their complex interactions were unsurpassed. Sticky had already absorbed almost everything ever published about chemistry. This fact, combined with his own compelling experiments, as well as his unequaled ability to keep up with the new research being reported in scientific journals, he had read several each morning in several languages, had marked him as an obvious candidate for directing chemical research in a laboratory. Whether or not he ran a distinguished lab, though, George Sticky Washington was already a famous name in the world of science. So why did he feel such like a kid? But there it was, the truth. Sticky still felt like a kid. He thought of himself as Sticky, despite his efforts to return to his given name. He still liked it better when the others accidentally called him that, too. It felt more natural. When they called him George, he felt as if they didn't know him, and if they were speaking to someone else. Yet he clearly had one foot in the adult world, and it seemed only right that he bring his other foot along, that make that second step. But he didn't want to, except that he did. Or did he? Sticky Washington knew everything, evidently, except what he wanted. He took out a spray bottle and squirted it onto the resemble of gray ash in the corner of the rooftop patio. The ash made a squeaky, sputtering sound like that of a deflating balloon, turned into a white smoke, and drifted away on the breeze. Sticky made a calculation in his head. He was tallying up the quantity and price of the chemicals his mistake had cost him. Yes, there had been an emergency, but if Sticky had thought to clear everything away sooner, there would have been no dangerous near miss up here with Kate, and no lost materials. Instead, it was Rennie who had thought of it just in time. Sticky clenched his teeth. He didn't blame his friend for being such a nimble thinker. Nor was Rennie the kind of person who gloated. Quite the opposite, in fact. Still, what it must be like to be the first person everyone looked to for answers. The one who could always figure out the last piece of the puzzle. Sticky couldn't help thinking it might be nice, though he knew it would also come with a lot of pressure. Even so, if Rennie hadn't started thinking about leaving, Sticky might have never considered it himself. Certainly he wouldn't have sent letters of inquiry to prestigious laboratories. Not yet, anyway. But Rennie was inclined to go, or so it seemed to Sticky. Someone like Rennie could do anything, so who could blame him for not wanting to stay here with his childhood friends, working on projects, never really meeting anybody, never really testing his wings? No, Sticky didn't blame him. But then, why did he feel so abandoned? Because you're still a kid, Sticky thought, rolling his eyes. You're supposed to be so mature, but your friend talks about leaving, and you start crying on the inside. You've barely been able to make eye contact with him for weeks. Sticky put away the spray bottle and powder canisters and took up a large push broom. He felt his eyes burning. Had he used the wrong neutralizer? He knew he hadn't. He took a deep breath, let it out slowly, and began sweeping broken glass into tiny, glittering piles. It had been bad enough knowing that Kate wanted to go, but then she was Kate. The world wasn't big enough for Kate Weatherall. She was always coming and going, wasn't she? That's what Sticky had focused on, the idea that Kate would always come back. But he had been deluding himself? Had he just been scared to look at this truth? So many things Sticky didn't know, but one thing he did. If he went away to direct a laboratory, he wouldn't be left behind here, feeling abandoned. Sticky heard a stairwell door rattle and open. He turned to see Rennie in the doorway, panting and red-faced. "We have got to fix that platform recall mechanism," Rennie said, wiping his brow. "Sorry, I didn't expect you or I would have sent it down." "No, I know, it's fine," Rennie said, coming over. He surveyed the patio. "I see you've already got most of it, but I can help you with the tables. I guess we should let Kate deal with the parachute herself, huh?" "Yeah, she'll have a system," Sticky looked at Rennie sidelong. "So, did you get it figured out?" Rennie scratched his head. "To be honest with you, I can't seem to think straight. I think it's unsettling me to have us all scattered around the house. At a time like this, I don't know," he shrugged. "I'm just not used to it." Sticky nodded. His eyes were stinging again. "We probably all feel that way," he said in a slightly strained voice. "So, okay then, if you're really that keen on helping, maybe we can discuss Mr. Benedict's riddle while we get all this cleared up?" "Sounds like a plan," said Rennie gratefully. He took a step toward the nearest mangled table, then stopped. He turned to Sticky. "The way you had everything set up like a chessboard," he said, "why did you do that? You don't need help remembering where things are." Of course Rennie would think that, Stiggy thought, and he smiled. It was in case you came up here, he admitted, in case you were interested. I thought it would be easier if we could stand in one spot and I could use chess notation to point out whatever chemical I was speaking about at the moment. He paused. But let me guess, you already figured as much. I just figured you had a reason, Rennie said. It seemed like too much of a coincidence. Right, Stiggy said. Well, he tapped his nose and pointed. Rennie chuckled. For the record, he said, I was. You were what? Going to come up here, because I was interested. Still am, in fact. When all of this is over, will you catch me up? Deal, Stiggy said. They jokingly shook hands, each feeling a small but welcoming sense of relief, and together they set to cleaning up what remained of the patio mess. But they had hardly begun when Constance came panting out of the stairwell. Their mouths opened simultaneously, each ready to apologize for not sending the platform down. Anything to keep Constance from going on to rage, but she gave them no opportunity. SQ's in trouble, she gasped. We have to help him. She doubled over, resting her hands on her knees, trying to get her breath. Rennie bent forward, trying to see her face. What do you mean? SQ? What could... Constance looked up, and the fear was plain in her eyes. She had only to say the next word to send Rennie and Sticky running for the platform. McCracken.